Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Gimel Amud Aleph, six lines down. Again, we're having numerous statements that are brought from Rabbi Yirmiya v'itei me Rabbi Chiya ba'abo. They're not necessarily related to our Gemara or related to Megillah at all. They're just because the Gemara here is bringing all of his statements, the first of which related to Megillah, which is what is called v'chola samuch lo, what's called close to a walled city. And we had that statement from Amar Rabbi Yirmiya v'itei me Rabbi Chiya ba'abo ke mechamatan l'tiveria. And that is about a meal. So that statement now precipitates a list in the Gemara of a number of memrot from Rabbi Yirmiya v'itei me Rabbi Chiya ba'abo. So here we start with one. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya v'itei me Rabbi Chiya ba'abo. Targum shel Torah. The translation of the Torah into Aramaic. Unkulu sager amaro mipi Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbi Yoshua. That was authored by Unkulus, the convert, who did it under the auspices or under the tutelage of Rabbi Eliezer ve Rabbi Yoshua. Now, as far as Targum is concerned, there are two ways to translate any item. One way to translate a book or any language is to translate it based on the absolute translation of the words that are there. You take the words and you translate each word. The other methodology for translation is to translate the idea or the concept trying to be conveyed by the book or by the translation that you are making. So here, when we have the Targum on the Torah, and we have the Targum we're going to see on the Nevi'im, in general, the Targum is trying to give us a sense of what is in the Pasuk. It's an explanatory type of Targum of translation. It does try to stick to absolute translation of the words, but it will deviate from that in order to give you an explanation of the Pasuk. Or, in many places, Unkulus actually puts in the Mamar Chazal, or the understanding of Chazal, into the Pasuk, and therefore translates it with an eye towards the Midrashei Chazal, or the way that Chazal viewed the Pasuk. So this type of translation that Unkulus does is not a simple translation. It's a translation that incorporates a tzad of limud in it, a explanation that is through the prism of Chazal. And that's why when we do Shtayim Mikra Vecha Targum, the Targum is important because the Targum is not just simply a translation, it's a Targum that is explanatory in nature. So that was put together by Unkulus Sager. Targum Shel Nevi'im, Yonatan Ben Uziel Amaro, Mipi Chagai, Zechariah, Umalachi. So Yonatan Ben Uziel put together the translation into Aramaic of the Nevi'im, and he did this under the auspices of the Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, Umalachi. This is an expression that's used numerous times in the Gemara, that the land of Israel shook 400 parsot to 400 parsot, which basically means that this was something that was upsetting to the status quo, and therefore it shakes because something just changed here, and it's a dramatic change. A heavenly voice comes out and says, who is this individual who is disclosing my secrets to people? Amad Yonatan ben Uziel Araglav. Yonatan ben Uziel gets up and accepts responsibility. I'm the one who disclosed the secrets to people. Galui v'yadua lefanecha, but you know very clearly, shelo lichvodi asiti. I didn't do it for my own honor. Shelo lichvod beit abo, and I didn't do it for the honor of my father's house. Elo lichvodcha. For your kavod, asiti, I did all of this for kavod shemaim, meaning I did it l'shem shemaim. Shelo yirbu machloket v'Yisrael. So there will not be extensive arguments amongst Klal Yisrael. Meaning that the translation indicates to us how to read the pasuk. Many times the pasuk is unclear, especially without diktuk, without ta'amim in the pasuk. It's not necessarily clear how to translate or to read the pasuk. With a running translation, then we know how to parse the pasuk, we know how to read the pasuk. So that's what Yonatan ben Uziel does by creating the translation. He helps us to understand the psukim, how to discern, how to parse the psukim. Ve'od bikesh legalot targum shel ktuvim. He wanted to continue his work and translate the ktuvim as well. Yatzta bat kol ve'amra lo dayecha. It's enough. That's it. Sufficient what you've done in the Nevi'im. Don't do it in the Ketuvim. My time up. Why didn't they want him to continue in the Ketuvim? Mishum dit be'ketz Mashiach. Because in there is disclosed the final time when Mashiach will arrive. As Rashi says in the end of Sefer Daniel. And therefore, if he translated it, then it would give disclosure to items that Hashem would prefer not be disclosed, that they remain cryptic within the Ktuvim of Sefer Daniel. So now the Gemara says, "V'targum shel Torah unkulus agir amaro." Is it really true that the targum of the Torah came from unkulus? V'hama Rav Ika bar Avin amarav Chananel amarav. My dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk that is found in Nehemiah? Rashi says it comes from Sefer Ezra. That's probably because Ezra and Nehemiah were a single Sefer in his time, so he calls it Sefer Ezra. Rabbi Kiva Eger, in other places, says that the reason that Rashi does that is because it's Ezra speaking. Even though it's found in Sefer Nehemiah, it's Ezra speaking, so he calls it Sefer Ezra. It's there. Ve'ikru'u, b'Sefer, it's missing here from the pasuk, but it's b'Torat ha'elukim, mifurash, v'som seichel, v'yavinu b'mikra. So it says in the pasuk in Nehemiah that they began to read in the Torah of Hashem clearly, that's mifurash, and then they gave an interpretation to it, an understanding to it, which is v'som seichel, that in order, kadesh yavinu, so that they could understand it, so that they had a better understanding of what it was, and then that would conclude with v'yavinu b'mikra. Then they understood what they were reading, or they understood what they were interpreting. So now the Gemara darshins on that pasuk from Nehemiah, that v'yikru'u v'sefer b'torat ha'elukim ze mikra. That's the psukim themselves. Mifurash ze targum. That's the translation. V'som seichel elu ha'psukim. So Psechel tells you where to divide the psukim up. Remember, again, if it's written on a cloth with psukim, like a Sefer Torah that we have today, it's not clearly defined where the psukim end. So that here gives you the breakdown of the psukim. Ve'yavinu b'migra elu piskei ta'amim. Those are the trop that help you to discern the meaning of the pasuk based on how you punctuate the pasuk. Ramilah elu ha'misoret. And some say that it's not the Pisgei Tamim, but rather the Mesoret, assuming that it means like the Malay and the Chaser and other items of how to write, even though they're not necessarily pronounced that way. So I have a problem here because we have a suggestion that Unkulus is the one who put together the Targum. And here we have in Sefer Nehemiah, based on the Drasha of Chazal, that Ezra and Nehemiah were putting together the Targum of the Mikra, because that's what they were working on in this Pasuk. So Gemara gives the same answer as it did to the previous situation that we brought down with regards to a statement of Rabbi Yirmiyah Avitem Rabbi Chiya Rava by Mansapach Tzofim Amarum. Here we say Shachachum V'chazru V'yazdum. They forgot it and then they went back and put it back to its original state. So yes, it was put together in the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, but then it was forgotten or lost, and Unkulus Agir reestablishes or is able to reprint the Targum of the Torah. Now the Gemara asks, "Maishna deoraita delo izdaza ve'adenivie izdaza." Why is it when Unkulus translates the Torah, nothing happens, but when Yonatan ben Uziel translates the Navi, all of a sudden the whole place starts to shake? There's an earthquake, meaning that there's some sort of discomfort, or Hashem is upset about the fact that he's translating it. When it says deoraita mifarsha milta, in the Torah everything's clear and explicit. Not necessarily in terms of halacha, things that we need to learn out, you need a Torah Shebaal Peh. But in terms of what's written in the Torah, the statements are not so cryptic. But the Nevi'e, Iga Mile de Mefarshan, in the Navi, some things are readily understandable. Iga Mile de Mistaman, there are certain things that are a little more hidden, a little more difficult to understand. Dechtev, and now the Gemara gives you an example from a pasuk in Zechariah. It says, Bayomahu, Igdal ha-mispeid b'Yerushalayim. On that day, there will be a great eulogy in Yerushalayim, Kimispad Hadadrimon Bebikat Megiddon. Similar to the eulogy for Hadadrimon in the valley of Megiddon. The problem is, we never bump into any Hadadrimon that's eulogized in Bikat Megiddon. So what is meant by this pasuk? Amar Rav Yosef, Il Malay Targuma the Haigra, was it not for the translation into Aramaic of this pasuk? Lo Yadana Maika Amar. I would not have known what the pasuk meant. I would have been in the dark. So the translation of Yonatan ben Uziel enlightens him as to how to read the pasuk properly. Now Rav Yosef was a baki in Targum because Rav Yosef fell ill in the middle of his life and he became a Sagi Nahor. He lost his vision. And we know that in the time of the Gemara, at least, Devarim Shebichtav, things that were written down, you could only read them mitoch haktav. Now, Devarim Shebal Peh, you're allowed to say Baal Peh. So Rav Yosef, who's now a Sagi Nahora, who was blind, could not read mitoch haktav. He couldn't read mitoch haktav, and therefore he couldn't quote psukim directly. So therefore he learned the Targum instead, in order to know what the psukim said. So that's why he's the one here mentioning the fact that he knew the Targum of Yonatan ben Uziel. So Maika Amar, what is it saying over here? Biyomahu yazgem misbida biYerushalayim. On that day there will be a great eulogy in Yerushalayim. Kimisbida dachav bar Omri dekatal yate hadadrimon ben Tavrimon beramot Gilad. Like the misbid for Achav bar Omri, one of the kings of Israel, who was killed in a battle by Hadadrimon ben Tavrimon in a place called Ramot Gilad. Ukamisbida de Yoshia bar Amon. And like the misbid, the eulogy of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who we discussed earlier in Gemara Tanit, the Katayate Paro Chagira Bibikat Megiddo, who was killed by Paro Necho. So the Gemara here is translating Necho or Neche as being someone who is lame, Chagir or Chigur. Bibikat Megiddo is in the location where he did it. So basically what the Targum does is it divides up the pasuk and says that these are two different eulogies. That this eulogy in the Atid Lavo will be a big eulogy like these two eulogies. One is the Mispeid of Hadadrimon, which is Hadadrimon is the one who killed Achav, and that's talking about the Mispeid of Achav. And Bigat Megiddon is talking about Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who's killed in Bigat Megiddo. So those two eulogies, this eulogy will be even greater than those two eulogies. What eulogy are they referring to? That's a machloket that we saw in the Gemara in Sukkah. Where in Sukkah is a machloket is whether this is a eulogy for Mashiach ben Yosef, or is this a eulogy for the Yetzer Hara? And what it's saying over here is that the eulogy here will be so great that it'll be greater than a eulogy that you have for a Rasha, and it'll be greater than the eulogy that you have for a Tzaddik. Achav is a Rasha, and his great eulogy was for a person who was a Rasha, celebrated by those Rishayim, and therefore it says that that eulogy, Latid Lavo, will be even greater. Number two is, we said that there is a eulogy for Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Yoshiyahu HaMelech is a big tzaddik. So there you have a eulogy for him. That eulogy, Latid Lavo, will be even greater than the eulogy of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, who was the tzaddik. If you remember from the Gemara in Sukkah over there, it says when the Yitzhara is killed, that both the tzaddikim and the Rishayim will be crying. The tzaddikim will be crying. They'll say, wow, we can't believe how big this Yitzhara is, and we were able to overcome it. The Rishayim will be crying because they'll say, we can't believe how small this Yitzhara is, and we weren't able to overcome it. So you see that the Tzaddikim are crying, and the Rishayim are crying. So therefore here, when it talks about this Mispeid Latid Lavo, this Mispeid Latid Lavo is talking about both a Mispeid that is greater than the Rishayim and greater than the Tzaddikim. I mean, in one case we had a Tzaddik, in one case we had a Rasha. So it's saying that that Mispeid will be greater than those two individuals. Then the Gemara continues and says, "Veriti ani Daniel devadi et amara, v'anashim asher yu imi lo ru'u et amara." I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, but the people with me did not see the vision. Aval charada gedola nafla lehem, but they had this tremendous trembling or fear that came upon them. Vayivruchu behachaveh, and they went running off into hiding so that they would not be affected by it. So man ninu anashim. Who are these individuals that Daniel is referencing that he says that they don't see what I'm seeing? So I'm a Rabbi Yirmiyah v'imiteima Rabbi Chir Ba'ava. So you know what this is doing here again, because now we have another statement by Rabbi Yirmiyah v'imiteima Rabbi Chir Ba'ava. Ze Chagai, Zechariah, u'Malachi. It's these three Nevi'im that are along with Daniel. Inu adifi minei. They are greater than him, meaning greater than Daniel. V'iu adif minayu. And Daniel is greater than those three Nevi'im. Inu adifi minei. They are greater than Daniel. De inhu nevi'ei. V'iu lavna v'iu. He is not a Navi, whereas Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi are known as Nevi'im. Daniel was never sent on a mission to speak to Klal Yisrael. He's never empowered by Hashem to communicate with Klal Yisrael, so he doesn't have that status of a Navi. He does communicate with Hashem, he does speak to Hashem, but it's not in a mission to go out and give over a prophecy to Klal Yisrael. So he's never Negdar, he's never given that title of a Navi. Whereas Iu Adif Minayu, on the other hand, Daniel is greater than Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Diu chaza, he saw the vision. Vinu lo chazu, and they didn't see the vision. My says, v'michem achar to lo chazu, my time yivitu. If they didn't see it, what are they getting all afraid about? Why did they run away? So afagav deinu lo chazu, mazlayu chazu. Even though they didn't see it, their mazel saw it. What does it mean, their mazel saw it? Rashi says, mazlayu is sar shel kol adam lamalo. Each individual has an angel or a ministering angel that is above him. So even though he didn't see it, his mazel, his malach saw it, and that caused him to take off or take flight. That irrational fear is generated by his mazal. So amaravina shmamina. So now from this you would conclude, hai man demivit, avagav diu lo chazi. If someone is afraid or in trembling or has some sort of anxiety, even though they're not seeing anything, mazle chazi. That's being seen by his mazel, and that's what's generating the anxiety or the fear here. So maita kante, what do you do in order to cure this problem, in order to rectify the situation? So likra kriyat shema, read kriyat shema. This is akin to what we do, kriyat shema lamita, that we read kriyat shema in order to ward off all the mazikim. Vikayim b'makom atinofet, if it is a place that is disgusting, where it would be improper to say kriyat shema, then shof mi duchte abaga mide. He should move from his location 4 amot. He should clear out wherever he is and move 4 amot away. Vilo, if he can't do that, lemahochi. Iza de beitabche shmina minai. There is this much fatter goats over there that you can go take a look at. I'm not a good meal. There are better people to eat than me. As he's trying to ward off whatever this anxiety is being called, whatever shade that is causing it, trying to ward it up by saying there's better, fatter people out there to eat. You shouldn't be looking at me. I'm not a good meal for you. All right, so that's the conclusion of these statements of Rabbi Yirmiyah, Vivitem Rabbi Chir Ba'abo. And now we're going to move back into discussing our Mishnah with regards to Kriyat HaMegillah. So now the Gemara says, V'hashto damat midina midina vi'ir vi'ir the drasho, that we said before at the end of yesterday's daf, that the Gemara darshins from midina midina something, and from ir vi'ir something, then mishpacha mishpacha lemayato. The pasuk continues, mishpacha mishpacha. So what distinction is there? So I'm Rabbi Yossi Berchanin Laha, vi mishpachot ki'una v'levi'a, shemevatlim avodotam uvaim lishmoa mikra migila. Mishpacha mishpacha comes to teach you that Kohanim and Levi'im, who are in their avoda, and also Israel, b'mamadam, they have to stop whatever they're doing to come to hear mikra migila. Tamar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, because now we have a statement, an Amoraic statement, which is Kohanim v'avodotam v'levi'im b'duchanam. Kohanim that are doing their avoda in the Mikdash. Levi'im that are working on the Duchan means that they are singing and doing their part in the avoda. Yisrael b'mamadam. And the Yisraelim that represent Kol Yisrael on the Korbanot that are present there, kulam mevatlim avodotam uvayin lishma mikra migilah. They all have to walk away from what they're doing and go hear the Migilah. Tanya nami hochi. From here we also have a brayta that supports this understanding. Kohanim b'avodotam uvayin b'duchanam Yisrael b'mamadam kulam mevatlim avodotam uvayin lishma mikra migilah. So it's not only an Amoraic statement, it's also a brayta that supports that statement of Rav Yehuda Marav, which is that everybody has to desist from this avoda and go here mikra migila, or basically mikra migila trumps avoda. Mikan samchu shubet rabbi shemavatlim tamu torah. So from this they extrapolated in the Beit Midrash of Rabbi that not only is mikra migila override avoda, but also is mevatel tamud torah. It also is mevatel learning. Uvain lishma mikra migila. You have to stop learning and go hear the migila. Kavachomer mi'avoda. That's a kavachomer mi'avoda. Ma avoda shi chamura mivatlinan. Avoda which trumps Talmud Torah, and yet we say mikra migila overrides it. Talmud Torah lo koshekein. Certainly Talmud Torah should be overridden by mikra migila. All right. So now the Gemara will come back in a second. How do we know that avoda exceeds Talmud Torah? But here the Gemara has two statements, two important statements. The first statement is that Mikra Megillah overrides Avodah. And then we have a second statement, which is Mikra Megillah overrides Talmud Torah. Now, as far as Mikra Megillah overriding Talmud Torah, that's very difficult. Because we have the Gemara in Kiddushim. It says, which is better? Is learning better or is Masim, is action better? And the Gemara concludes over there that everybody agrees that a limud is better because it may be the day maaseh, because it brings you to act. And if you don't know, you can't act. But we all know that the purpose of learning Torah is so that we can carry out the principles of the Torah and do what the Torah says. So why would you think over here that there's a problem in terms of bitul Talmud Torah to read the Megillah? Forgetting the fact that it itself is part of the canon, it's Tanakh, but we'll grant them that's only Ktuvim, and it doesn't compare to learning Torah from the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, or from the Torah Shebaal Peh. But nevertheless, you can't call it Mevatlein Talmud Torah. This is the whole point. You learn in order to carry out what you're supposed to do with the mitzvot. So what you have to say here is something that really is answering, Tosfos answering another question, which is, he doesn't understand the previous statement. The previous statement says the Kohanim, the Levim, and the Israelim stop whatever they're doing, and they go to hear Mikra Megillah. Tosfos says, why do they have to do that? Isn't there plenty of time in the morning, in the early morning, to do whatever they have to do? And then they can read the Megillah. So why do they have to leave the Avodah to go read the Megillah? Let them do their Avodah in the morning and then go do Mikra Megillah. He says, V'yesh lomar, de tov likrot im atzibur mishum dehavi tfei persume nisa. He says, you're right, the Kohanim and Levim there can make their own minion. But there is an advantage by Purim to going to a place that has more people, or going to a gathering that is more extensive, because we have the principle of both Rov HaMahadrat Melech, but also Persume Nisa, which is an integral part of the mitzvot of Purim, as well as the mitzvot of Chanukah. So the idea of Persume Nisa tells me that I'm going to trump Avodah over here, meaning that even though, yes, I could have done Avodah earlier, but because if I go to Mikra Megillah to hear the Megillah in the biggest shul, I have to then stop Avodah, that we say is worthwhile. It's worthwhile to go to the place that has more people, even though you could read it yourself later if you just did the Avodah now. Nevertheless, we tell you go to the place that has more people because there's an advantage or there's a premium on such a mitzvah, and therefore we allow you to do it, even though it's going to cause you to be mevato min Avodah. So from Tosfot's answer here, we could also suggest that's the answer to the second question. That the question here is not about whether you, of course, you stop Avodah to go hear the Megillah. The question is, do you stop the Avodah in order to do the Megillah in a more enhanced way, which is to do it in a more public manner, to do it with more people? And the answer to the Gemara is yes. And the same thing with the Vatlim Talmud Torah. You could read the Megillah here in the Beit Midrash. You could read the Megillah to yourself. Do we give a premium on the fact that you're going to go hear it B'tzibur, not only just B'tzibur, but you can hear it in a much bigger Tzibur? Is that worth being mevatel Talmud Torah in order to do it? The answer of the Gemara is yes, that we are. Mikra Megillah is mevatlin Talmud Torah. Not Talmud Torah in the core sense, but Talmud Torah because you're going to do more. You're going to do this mitzvah in a more enhanced manner. In order to do that, you're going to have to be mevatel more Talmud Torah, and that we say is permissible over here. So that's the two statements that we spoke about here. The second thing we have to ask is, whenever the Gemara gives you precedence, here it has two competing items, and it says to you that Mikra Megillah takes precedence. Now, when is that true? Is that true anytime? That no matter when Mikra Megillah and Avodah come into competition, Mikra Megillah always takes precedence? Or does it mean when you have the opportunity to do both of them, which do you do first? So here you have an opportunity to do Avodah and Mikra Megillah. Which one do you do first? You do the Mikra Megillah first. But in a case where they come into competition, that we wouldn't say. When they're in competition, we would say, no, you can't do that. You have to do the Avodah and not Mikra Megillah, because Mikra Megillah is only a din derabanan, whereas the din of Avodah is a din deoraita. So, of course, the deoraita will trump the derabanan when they're in competition. It's simply here we're talking about precedence, which one goes first. There you can say the Mikra Megillah goes first. But if they're in competition, there's only enough time to do one of them, then you would only do the one that is deoraita, which means Avodah, not Mikra Megillah. So first of all, that seems to be what Tosafot says. That Tosafot we just read before, that's what he seems to be indicating. That the issue here is simply where they are in competition, not for a single slot, but in terms of order or precedence. Which one do I do first? So the answer is I do Mikra Megillah first. But implying that if they came into competition with each other for one slot or one slot of time, I would give precedence to Avodah. And that is what the Ran says as well. The Ran says here, with regards to the upcoming Gemara, which we speak about, Meit Mitzvah trumping other items, the Ran says, with regards to that Meit Mitzvah trumping other mitzvot is not true all the time. That's only true when you have time to do both of them. Afopi sheshaut bayom lavod avodah v'achar kach dekrot, afilu achi mevatlim avodoto kedei lishmo migilah b'tzibur. That's exactly what we just said. That if you have competition between Avodah and Mikra Megillah, you stop the Avodah to read the Megillah B'tzibur. Miu. Dafka b'shicholim acharkach lashlim ha'avodah. That's only true when you can finish the Avodah afterwards. Halav hochi. If it wasn't for that fact, vaday ein mevatlin avodah d'oraita mishum Megillah d'Rabbanan. For sure, we would not override Avodah, that is d'oraita, for Megillah, that is d'Rabbanan. What you see here in the Tosafot and the Ran is that this Gemara is about precedence. It's about when you have the opportunity to do both, which one goes first. It's not about the competition between them, as to which one we would favor if we only had the choice to do one of them. That our Gemara is not addressing. Our Gemara is simply addressing the case of when you have both of them to do, and you have time to do both of them, which one goes first. Now this whole sugya is a corollary, in a sense, to the principle of Osek B'mitzvah, Poter Min HaMitzvah. Over there, Osek B'mitzvah, Poter Mitzvah, we saw that back in Daf Chof Hei, Chof Vav in Sukkah. We discussed the issue of different views of the Rishonim as to what it means, Osek B'mitzvah, Poter Min HaMitzvah. But over here, this is like a corollary of that discussion, which is here I have competing mitzvot, which one gets precedence, or when we can only do one of them, which one do we do? So here, both Tosafot and the Ran separate between those two questions and say that when it comes to precedence, Megillah goes first, but when it comes to competition, where we're going to do one, then Avodah would go first. We'll finish up the sugya and we'll show that there are Shittot that disagree and view things the other way. So Gemara says here, how do you know that Vavodah Chamura Mitalmud Torah? How do you know that Avodah is more stringent or overrides Talmud Torah? Vaktiv. Is that really true? Because we have a pasuk. When Yeshua was in Yericho, the Tzar Tzva Hashem shows up to Yeshua while he's walking around at night by their encampment near Yericho, and he bows down to him. How does Yeshua bow down to him? Person is not allowed to greet another individual at night. Because we worry that the person that you're greeting is not a human being, but rather some sort of demon. It says, Shani Hotam, Damarlei, Kani, Tsar Tzva Hashem. Because this individual says to him, I am the general of Hashem's army. So it says, Vidilma Meshakre. Maybe he's lying about this. He's a shade. Maybe he lies. It says, Gmiri, Dilomafke Shem Shemai Levatala. He might lie, but he won't lie using the Shem Hashem. The fact that they use the Shem Hashem is already indicative of the fact that he's telling the truth. So now, we solve the problem of how Yeshua is greeting this individual. He's having an interaction with this individual. Tosafot just clarifies or qualifies over here that this whole idea of not saying hello to people is only when you're in a place where people are not commonly found. When you're in the city or in a place where you bump into people all the time at night, that's not a problem. The problem is when you're out in the field and it's an empty place and all of a sudden you bump into someone, there you have to be choshesh for this issue that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi raises. Now the Gemara says, okay, what happened here? What transpired between Yeshua and this Tsar Tzva Hashem? The Gemara says, V'amar lo, emesh bitautam tamid shel ben arbaim. I have an issue with you because last night you didn't bring the korban tamid shel ben arbaim. V'achshav, and right now, bitautam Talmud Torah. Right now, you're also being mevatel Talmud Torah. V'amar lo, ezemehen bato. On which one of these are you coming to take me to task for? I came now. Now means I'm coming on the issue that is now. What's the issue now? That is Bitul Torah. Miyad, right away, it says, Vayelin Yoshua Balailahu Bitoch Amek. That Yoshua that night then goes down into the valley. And Rabbi Yochanan says, Melamed Shalan Bom Kashal Alacha. That he went and he slept or rested in the depths of halacha, meaning that he learned Torah that night. All right, now, this proof that the Gemara brings over here, the question that the Gemara brings over here, is very difficult. It's very difficult. First of all, they quote a pasuk from Yeshua that does not exist. The pasuk they're quoting from Yeshua, Chet, is actually a combination of two pasukim, and the pasuk itself that they're quoting doesn't exist. There, the story in Yeshua is about Ai. It's when Yeshua is about to set up the second battle of Ai for Bnei Yisrael to conquer the Ai. He sets up a marav, he sets up a trap behind the city. He puts troops to hide there. And then he takes the rest of the Klal Yisrael, the army, and goes through the front door of the Ai. And then they pretend that they're losing the battle and they start to run away. And the people of the city start to chase them because they see that they're winning the battle. After they vacate the city chasing Bnei Yisrael, the Marav, the ambush behind the city, goes into the city and light sets fire to the city. And then they basically trap the people of Ai between the ambush and Bnei Yisrael, and they kill them out. So in preparations for that, it says about Yoshua, he explains what he's going to do. And it says, Vai Yishlachem Yoshua, Ve'yochul Amarav. Yoshua sends those people that are going to the ambush to go behind the city. Ve'yishvu ben Beit El ben Ai, Miyam La'ai. They were between Beit El and Ai, on the western side of Ai. Vayalein Yoshua B'laylahu B'toch Ha'am. So then, if you use the word vayalein, which is found in our Gemara, it says there, vayalein Yoshua b'laylahu b'toch ha'am, that he did amongst the people. Then we have a continuation of the story, vayishkim Yoshua b'boker, vayifkod ha'am, vayalhu v'ziknei Yisrael ifnei ha'am ha'ai. And then, vayachol ha'am ha'milchama asher ito alu, vayikshu v'yivo neged ha'ir, vayachonu mitzvon ha'ai, vagai benav uven ha'ai. And then it says he takes 5,000 people to put as the ambush. And then he says, "Vesimu am el et kol ha'machaneh shemitzafon le'ir, v'et akivo miyam le'ir, v'yelech Yoshua b'laylahu b'toch ha'emek." That Yoshua walked, not v'yalein, but v'yelech Yoshua b'laylahu b'toch ha'emek. So if you go to the pasuk, it has to either be v'yelech Yoshua b'laylahu b'toch ha'emek, not v'yalein. If you call it v'yalein, it has to be then v'yalein Yoshua b'laylahu b'toch ha'am. Okay, that's the first problem here, that the pasuk they're quoting doesn't exist. You have to switch that first word in order to make it work. The second problem is that the Gemara now connects between two incidents that have nothing to do with each other, which is in Yeshua Hey, it says, Vayhi biyot Yeshua b'Richo. So he's clearly by the battle of Richo, it's before they lay siege to Richo, and then he bumps into the Tzar Tzva Hashem in that incident. And then the Gemara says here that that incident, the Tzar Tzva Hashem is coming to complain to him that they were Mevatel the Tamid, and they were Mevatel Talmud Torah. And then the Gemara says, Miyad, right away. Right away afterwards, Yoshua does the other thing, which is, Vayalein or Vayelech, in Betocha Emek, that he went into the valley, the Umkoshal Alacha. The truth is that that's Perchet, not, and that's coming from Perchet. So it's not Miyad. It doesn't happen immediately afterwards. As Rashi says, Lo Bo'otu Alaylektiv, El Balayla Shetzar Alaoy. That's not written about that night when he met the Tzarts of Hashem. It's written about much later time period when he goes to the Ai. So he rectified whatever he did. Miyad chazar Yoshua midvarav, k'shuba laila acher b'matzora sak b'torah. So he changed his practice. The upcoming time when they did the same thing, he changed his practice. But Rashi over here describes that they were mevato from Tom Torah because they put out the ma'arav. They put up an ambush. The problem is that the ambush has to do with Ai and doesn't have anything to do with Yericho. There is no ambush in Yericho. In Yericho, they lay siege to the city and they go around the city. So the more likely explanation here is that they laid siege to the city. And in laying siege to the city, they were mevatel both from the Korban Tamid as well as the Talmud Torah. So Tosfot says, I understand why they were mevatel Talmud Torah, because they need the people to lay siege to the city. So they weren't available to learn. But he says, why weren't the Kohanim available to bring the Korban Tamid? The answer is because the Kohanim were carrying the Aron. If you remember by Yericho, the Aron also goes around the city and is a part of the battle weapons that they take in. Now this is according to the Shita, at least Tosafot seems here to indicate like the Shita, there was only one Aron that went with the people. There wasn't two Aronot. There was an Aron that stayed in the Machaneh and an Aron that went out, but this is the Aron that went out, and therefore the Kohanim are busy. It says they're busy, they didn't have time to bring the Korban to meet. So the Tzar Tzva Hashem bumps the complaint to him on these two items, because he says basically it's nighttime, and at nighttime we don't wage war. And since you're not waging war at night, then you should be available, number one, to bring the Korban Tamid. And number two is you should be available to learn Torah at night because you're not involved in the battle at night. There's no battle at night. We know that from the story by Yoshua of Shemesh B'Gibbon Dom V'Yarech V'Emek Ayalon. He wants the sun to stop so he can finish the battle, because once the sun sets, the battle is over. So that's the complaint of the Tzar Tzva Hashem. Again, it's not so simple, because obviously if you're laying siege to a city or placing an ambush, you have to keep the siege sealed at nighttime. And if you're putting in an ambush, it's much better for element of surprise to put it there at night so nobody can see you. But be that as it may, the Gemara puts this together to show you that in the time of Yoshua, we have a malach that comes and speaks to him and complains to him about Bitul Torah, but he doesn't complain to him about the Bitul of the Tamid. So you see there that Bitul Torah was much more important than the bitul hatamid. So how come you made a statement before that we understood or we assumed that avodah would trump Torah? So the Gemara says, "V'amar Shmuel bar Onya gadol tamud Torah yoter mehakrivat midim." So from this, I would conclude from this statement or this story by Yehoshua that Torah tamud Torah trumps bringing of the tmidim. Shneimar ata bati. Now I came. This is what I came. I came now over the issue that is now. What's the issue now? The issue now is that you are not learning Torah at night. When it says lokasha, ha di rabim, ha di yachid. Depends on the Talmud Torah. When you're talking about Talmud Torah of the rabim, that is of the masses, learning Torah of the masses, that trumps avoda. But Talmud Torah of the yachid of an individual, that is not trumping avoda. So avoda exceeds Talmud Torah of individuals, but it does not exceed the Talmud Torah of Rabim. That's how the Gemara reconciles between those two statements, that by Yehoshua, which is Talmud Torah Shel Rabim, therefore it was more important than the Avodah, versus what we're speaking about here, which is the Talmud Torah Yachid, where Avodah would trump in, and therefore we have our Kal Vachomer. If Mikra and Megillah overrides Avodah, then certainly it will override Limud HaTorah. Now, there is one interesting thing to note here, as Rashi says before, that it was important for them to bring the Korban Tamid while they were waging war, because Rashi says that the Korban Tamid was a form of protection, that it becomes to give them protection, and therefore they should have been osig in the Korban Tamid, because the Korbanot will give them protection in the battle, which is similar to what we said before in the Gemara and Tanit, the importance of Korbanot, and the importance of saying Korbanot in davening, especially in times of difficulty for Klal Yisrael. There we talked about it with regards to Avram Avinu and the Kinyan Aretz, that we said that our holding of the land and staying in the land is connected to the Hakravat Korbanot, and therefore there's a good reason to say Korbanot. Over here again, when we are in a difficult time and we're being attacked by our enemies, again, the saying of the Korbanot is something that brings us Haganah, it brings us defense. And therefore, again, another reason to strengthen our saying of Korbanot during times of difficulty like we are facing right now. And that's borne out by what we said over here, that they should have brought the Korban Tamid in order to protect themselves while they were going to battle. But the Marek says, "U'b'diyachid kal," is it really true that the Talmud Torah of an individual is below or subverted to Avodah? V'atnan, don't we have a Mishnah? Nashim b'mo'ed. When it comes to Chol HaMo'ed, this is going to be a Mishnah that we discuss in Mo'ed Katan, Me'anot Avolo Metapchot. They're allowed to do the Me'anot, which the Gemara there will explain to us, it's a certain type of eulogy that they did. The Inui is that everybody does it together. It's some sort of dirge that they do together, the women do, in order to engender a certain amount of emotion and crying over the loss of the individual. Avolo Metapchot. They're not allowed to be Metapchot. Rashi says it means they're not allowed to beat their chests. Although Tosafot gives a different interpretation, and we saw this also before, that Vayispoked Kapav with regards to Balak means to clap hands, and Vayitapcho B'yad means to smack your thigh. And that's the way Tosafot gives that as one of the explanations here, and it's most likely the explanation of Vayitapchot is that they were hitting their thighs, but some sort of hitting of the body, which is not a clapping, but a sounding of sorrow that is part of the eulogy of the individual. So this is permitted on Chol HaMo'ed to do the Me'aneh, but not to do the Mitapchot. V'Shmuel Omer, Mayu Smuchot Mita, if they were near the coffin, then Mitapchot, then they're allowed even to be Mitapchot. V'Roshei Chodoshim V'Chanukah Purim, Rosh Chodesh Chanukah Purim, which are on a lower level than Chol HaMo'ed, Me'anot U'Mitapchot, they're allowed to do both of these items. V'Bazeh V'Bazeh Einan Lo Mikonenot. But neither of these cases are allowed to be mikonein, which is another type of eulogy where one woman says something and all the other women repeat after her. So that's not permitted. So there is, again, Chanukah Purim and Rosh Chodesh have certain things you're not allowed to do in like a regular hesped. And then when it comes to Chol HaMo'ed, there are even more things that you can't do for a hesped. V'amar Rabba Bar Huna, Ein Mo'ed Bifnei Talmid Chacham. There's no such thing as Chol HaMo'ed when it comes to a Talmid Chacham. Mean that if you have a hesped for a Talmud Chacham, it's as if Chol HaMo'ed doesn't exist, and none of these practices are suspended. When it says Kol Shekein Chanukah Purim, so certainly Chanukah Purim and Chodesh are all going to be trumped by this as well, because if you're saying it by Chol HaMo'ed, which is Doraita, then certainly Chanukah Purim and Rosh Chodesh, which is Doraita, but not on the level of Chol HaMo'ed, all of those will be trumped by a Talmud Chacham. So you see here that this is an individual who is engaged in Torah, and he also overrides over here. So why is he overriding over here? So when it says, wait a minute, you're a little mixed up over here. Kavod Torah Kamart. There you're talking about Kavod Torah. Kavod Torah the Yachid Chamur. That's true. By Kavod Torah of the Yachid, it overrides. Talmud Torah the Yachid Kal. On the other hand, learning Torah of the Yachid, that does not override. So if it's Kavod Torah the Yachid, that overrides Chanukah Purim, meaning that overrides Mikra Megillah. When it comes to learning of the Yachid, that will not override Mikra Megillah, and Mikra Megillah will be given precedence in that case. Right now, the Gemara says, Amar Rava. Rava is going to have a number of statements here where he says, I know this is true, I know this is true, I know this is true. And then he's going to have a final statement at the end that says the question that he wants to raise here. He says, Apshitali avodah mikra megillah. If you have a competition between reading the Megillah and avodah, mikra megillah adif. Mikra megillah takes precedence. Midah Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina. That's what we just saw in the previous amud by Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, which is the Kohanim b'avodatam levim miduchanam yisrael madam kulam mivadlim avodatam uban lishma mikra megillah. There we all agree that they come to do mikra megillah and it trumps avodah because of mishpacha. So that I know for sure. Number two is, if it's Talmud Torah, Mikra Megillah, it's a competition between learning and Mikra Megillah, Mikra Megillah Adif. Mikra Megillah trumps, again, Midasam Chosho Beit Rabbi. That's again what we saw in the previous Amud, that they extrapolated from Avoda to Talmud Torah. That if Avoda, which is more Chamur than Talmud Torah, is overridden by Mikra Megillah, through the transitive property, the same would be true with regards to Talmud Torah, that Mikra Megillah would override. Talmud Torah will make mitzvah. If you have a competition between learning Torah and make mitzvah dif. And make mitzvah trumps midatanyo. Because we have a bright that it says, mevatlin Talmud Torah lo tzata mate. That you are mevatel Talmud Torah to take out a mate. Ula chanasat gala. So therefore you see here that Talmud Torah is overridden lo tzata mate. Now, as Tosafot points out over here, that when we're talking about make mitzvah dif, lav davka make mitzvah. That's not necessarily a mate mitzvah. V'hu adin l'chol ha-meitim shebo'olam. It's true of all meitim in the world. That this is also true that we would override with regards to mikra megillah for a quote-unquote mate mitzvah. Mate mitzvah is not literally a mate mitzvah, but rather anybody who died would get that precedent. Because the proof we brought from was from a braita which says, v'vatlin tamu t'ra'ad l'hotzat ha-meit. Over there, hotzat ha-meit is not only about the mate mitzvah, it's about any mate. And so because of that, Tosafot wants to say that this has application by any mate that we would be mevatel Talmud Torah in order to do the Otzata mate. There are other Rishonim that disagree and say that the Gemara here, when it says mate mitzvah, is talking about mate mitzvah dafko and not others. And we'll see that again in Halacha. I'll talk about that in a second. Then he says, avodah mate mitzvah. It's a competition between avodah and mate mitzvah dif. Mate mitzvah trumps again. How do I know that? Mivela choto. Machoto, that's written by Nazir. By the Nazir, it says he's not allowed to get tamei to anyone. And then it goes on and says that's true of Aviv, Imo, Achiv, Achoto. And those are all extraneous. If he can't become tamei to anybody, why is it also telling us he can't become tamei to his relatives? Why are his relatives different? Well, the answer might be because a Kohen is allowed to get tamei to his relatives. Here, the Torah says, no, this Nazir can't even become tamei to his relatives, similar to a Kohen Gadol. The Tanya. The Gemara says, since all those are extraneous, from each one of them, the Gemara darshan something. So from Aviv, it says that if he's a Nazir and it's a mate mitzvah, the mate mitzvah trumps and he has to become Tamei. Then the next one, Imo, comes to teach you that even if he's a Nazir Kohen, nevertheless, if he bumps into a mate mitzvah, he has to do it. Even though there are two problems here. He's a Nazir and he's a Kohen. Nevertheless, we tell him to do it. The next one comes to teach you, Achiv comes to teach you that even if he's a Nazir Kohen Gadol, he still has to deal with the Meit Mitzvah. Then Ulachuto is extraneous because we don't have anything to do with it, and therefore the Gemara does this drasha with it. Ulachuto matam alamar hayar hareish hayar olech lishchot et pischo. He's going to shek this Korban Pesach. Ulamul et bino. Or he's going to give a Brit Milah to his child. Both of these are mitzvot asay that involve karet. Vishama shemet lo meit. And he hears that someone died. Yochol itama. You would think maybe he should become tamei. Amart, the pasuk says lo itama. you can't become tamei. So there's no question. Yochol k'shem shenu mitamei l'achuto, kach anu mitamei l'mit mitzvah. You would think that this paradigm that we just set up means that he can't become tamei to anyone, just like he can't become tamei to his sister, he can't become tamei to anyone, including a mit mitzvah. Tamei lomar l'achuto. L'achuto hu doenu mitamei, aval mitamei l'mit mitzvah. For his sister, he may not become tamei, but there is somewhere where he can become tamei, and that's a mit mitzvah. So even though he is possibly, this is a machloket rishonim, whether this is talking about a Nazir, Kohen Gadol, that's going to do Pesach or Brit Milah, or this is anybody going to do Pesach or Brit Milah, that he's allowed to become Tamei for a Meit Mitzvah, even though that will ruin his ability to now do the Mitzvah to say that involves a Karet. Nevertheless, Meit Mitzvah trumps. So Rava says, again, I know when you have competition between Avodah and Meit Mitzvah trumps. Now, by Rava, here's the question. We know that Mikra Megillah trumps Avodah. We know that Mikra Megillah trumps Talmud Torah. We know that Meit Mitzvah trumps Avodah, and we know that Meit Mitzvah trumps Talmud Torah. So what's the question? These two items, Meit Mitzvah and Mikra Megillah, which one goes first? Since they both trump Avodah and Torah, which one of them is the top? So Haminayu Adif, which one is better? Mikra Megillah Adif Mishum Pursume Nisa. Does Mikra Megillah take precedence because it has the aspect of Pursume Nisa, publicizing the Nes? Or Dilma Meit Mitzvah Adif? Maybe Meit Mitzvah takes precedence Mishum Kavod Abriot. Because we have to give kavod to living beings, or here it's a person who's passed away, but we have to treat people in a proper manner. Butter debaya, after he asked the question, hader pashto. He answered the question. Meit mitzvah adif. Meit mitzvah has the top rung here. Damar mar, gadol kavod abriot shuduche et lo taseh shebitorah. That kavod abriot is even greater, so great, that it overrides a lo taseh shebitorah. Rashi over here says this refers to the psukim by Hashavat Aveda. Over there by Hashavat Aveda, it says you can't leave it behind. Lo tuchal italeim. Don't pretend you don't see it. You're not allowed to walk away as if you don't see it and not take care of it. But it says uktiv italamta, that you can hide. So the Gemara dashim that pamim shatam italeim. There are times we have permission not to take up the avoda, and you can close your eyes and not look. When's that? Zakein veinu lefik vodo. This is an individual who's an elderly or a person who is of stature and it's beneath his dignity to pick up this aveda and take care of it. Vitalamto, he can walk away. He doesn't have to take it because we don't ask someone to be pogeya in their kavod in order to do the mitzvah. And that's what we learn from there. So Rashi shows you, says the lota says, lo tuchal italeim. Nevertheless, because of kavod abriot, we say that doesn't apply. Doesn't apply to the zakein v'enu lefi kvodo. That's where Rashi learns it. The Ran, on the other hand, says that what it means here is, Lota Sesh B'Torah is talking about the Lota Sev Lota Sur, that you have to listen to the Chachamim. And that means that Gadol Kavod Abriot, that it overrides Dinei Derabbanan. Even though the Dinei Derabbanan have an aspect or right of them, because you're not allowed to not listen to the Chachamim because of Lota Sur, nevertheless, Kavod Abriot overrides that. So according to the Ran, the statement here is that Gadol Kavod Abriot should doche Lota Sesh B'Torah means that it's doche Dinei Derabbanan. The way Rashi is learning it, it's even in Dinei Doraita, Kavod Abriot would trump. And so therefore, now we have the conclusion that Meit Mitzvah is Adif. And what's very interesting over here is that Rava is the author of the sugi over here, and Rava is asking about these different competing ideas, and then he comes to a conclusion about these different competing ideas. What's very interesting is that Rava, on Daf Chof Gimel Amud Bet, in the Gemara in Shabbat, does the exact same thing with regards to Ner Chanukah and Ner Shabbat. It says, Amar Rava, Pshitali, Ner Beito V'Ner Chanukah. If I have a competition between the Neirot of Shabbat and Ner Chanukah, Ner Beito Adif, his Shabbos candle take precedence, Mishum Shalom Bayit. So here, by the way, that's the question he just asked here. If I have a competition between Meit Mitzvah and Mikra Megillah is Pesume Nisa. Ner Chanukah is Pesume Nisa. Or I have Kavod Abriot, or Ner Beito, which is Shalom Bayit. So which one goes first? So Rova in the Gemara in Shabbat answers, Ner Beito Adif. That your Shabbos candles go first. And over here in our Gemara, he answers the same way, which is Kavod Abriot takes precedence. Then he goes on to ask other questions there between Ner Beito and Kiddush Hayom, which goes first, and then Ner Chanukah and Kiddush Hayom, and so on and so forth. He asks the same type of questions that he's asking over here, exactly, and it's Rava, who's the author of the sugi over there, but he does come to the same conclusion, which is Kavod Abriot or Shalom Bayit does take precedence in both of these cases. Now, as we mentioned before, that with regards to this question of precedence, when you have two items that are competing over here, the way that the Ran learned it and the way that Tosafot learned it is that the question simply here is, if I can do both mitzvot, which one goes first? But if it comes down to push comes to shove and I can only do one of the mitzvot, then the mitzvah d'oraita will trump. That means the Mikra Megillah will never get precedence over any of these items because it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan. On the other hand, make mitzvah would get precedence because make mitzvah might be more important than these items because that is a mitzvah d'oraita. So that's the way that the Ran and Tosafot seem to learn over here, but that is not necessarily the view or of all of the Rishonim or Achronim here. So that's one thing. The second thing we have to discuss over here is with regards to make mitzvah. We said over here that make mitzvah trumps, and then we had Tosafot say that it's not only by make mitzvah, it's by any mate, that you have to take care of them, that trumps Mikra Megillah, and that trumps Talmud Torah, and that trumps Avoda. Is that really true? If you look in the Shilte Giborim on Daf Bet Amud Bet in the Rif, he says, you don't have to give up Mikra Megillah for someone who has other people to bury him. You read the Megillah and then you bury afterwards. So he gives a different view here that it's not true. It's this statement that we override Mikra Megillah and we override Avoda or Talmud Torah is only talking about a make mitzvah. It's not talking about someone who has people to bury them. So if you look, the halacha, when it's brought down, this is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, the halacha, he brings down the following in Tafresh Pei Zayin, Sif Bet. He says, Mivatlin Talmud Torah lishma Mikra Megillah. Kavachomer l'shar mitzvot shel Torah. Shukulam nidachim mipnei Mikra Megillah. So if Talmud Torah is overridden to do Mikra Megillah, certainly any other mitzvah d'oraita is overridden. There's nothing that takes precedence over Mikra Megillah. Chutz. What's the one exception? Mimeit mitzvah. Our meit mitzvah. But what type of meit mitzvah? She'en lo kovrim. That doesn't have people to bury him. The Ramah adds over here, k'dei l'torcho. That means that enough people to bury him, not only just to bury him, but enough people proper or befitting his kavod. That someone who bumps into a meit mitzvah buries the meit mitzvah and then afterwards reads the Megillah. Haga. Now here comes the Ramah. All that the Beit Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch just said, is only where he has enough time to do both of them. And who's the Ramah quoting? The Ran, the Tosafot. He's quoting all those that we just saw here. That when it comes to competition between them, and you can only do one of them, the Doraita trumps, and Mikra Megillah gets knocked off. The question of the Gemara here is simply when I can do both of them, which one goes first? And then he adds in, V'ha demeit mitzvah kodem, that makes it that trumps Mikra Megillah, and udavka, v'de'ef shalo lekorah. That's only true if he has enough time to read it acharkach, after he buries the mate. But if he doesn't have enough time to read the Megillah, and then bury the mate, and then read the Megillah, Megillah will take precedence over meit mitzvah, which seems to be against our Gemara. So we have to explain that. We have to explain the differences over here. If you look at the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Taz, from the Gra, who disagree. He says, "Ein shum mitzvah d'oraita nidchet mipnei shemikra megillah hurak midrabanan va'ayin bataz shevi b'shem rashal ubach the tamid mikra megillah kodem b'shum persume nisa v'agra b'biro gamkein sover hachi." So here you have others that disagree with this position of the Ramah. This position that's recorded by the Ran and the Tosafot, that Mikra Megillah is knocked off when it's competition with Mitzvah D'oraita. On the other hand, the Gra, the Taz, all believe that it overrides. Mikra Megillah overrides even when you're going to lose the Mitzvah D'oraita. Now it'll be Osik Mitzvah Patur and a Mitzvah, even though you're dealing with the Derabbanan. But over here, this will be because you give precedence to the Mikra Megillah, the other Mitzvah will fall by the wayside. And that's the way that they believe. That you would knock off even a mitzvah d'oraita. Their proof is from Talmud Torah. That Mikra Megillah overrides Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah is not a mitzvah you can make up. Whatever time you just lost from learning Talmud Torah, you can never make that up again. So you lost it completely. Nevertheless, Mikra Megillah trumps. So they say from that we can prove the fact that even by mitzvah d'oraita, Mikra Megillah trumps. That's number one. Number two is, we just said that the Ramah brings from the Mahara Mizrahi, that when it comes to bearing of a mate, we only give precedence to a mate mitzvah if you can read the Megillah afterwards. But if you can't read the Megillah afterwards, we don't. What do you mean? Our Gemara just said mate mitzvah takes precedence. So the Mishnah Berurah explains to us over here, that's because mate mitzvah is a mitzvah that doesn't get knocked off. If you have a choice here between Mikra Megillah and Mate Mitzvah, if you don't read the Megillah now, you'll never be able to read the Megillah. If you don't bury the mate now, then you can bury the mate at night. You're allowed to bury someone at night. You're allowed to bury them anytime afterwards. So therefore, it's not a mitzvah overet. Since it's not a mitzvah overet, we're going to give precedence to Mikra Megillah, and that's what the Maharal Mizrahi says over here. Now, once again, there are achronim that disagree with that position of the Maharal Mizrahi. Guess who those achronim are? That's the Taz, the Gra, again. Just like the Taz and the Gra before said that Mikra Megillah overrides no matter what, even against mitzvah Doraita, they say the same thing over here. Mate mitzvah overrides, even if you're going to lose Mikra Megillah. They say when the Gemara means overrides, it means literally. That's it. It gets precedence even when you're going to lose the other mitzvah. So they're consistent in their opinion in arguing under Ramah and saying, no, that Mate mitzvah is never knocked off. The Mishnah Berurah in the end makes a distinction which relates to what we said about Mate mitzvah over here, which is, he says, when it comes to a relative that has people to bury them, then over there, for sure, we will, number one, read the Megillah first and wait to bury them afterwards. And number two is we'll read the Megillah first. Because over there, they're not necessarily Negdar Kemet Mitzvah. That's only that expansion of Tosafot over here. But that's not necessarily the case. And so since this is a lower form of Mate Mitzvah, we're going to for sure read the Mikra Megillah if you're going to lose out that Mitzvah entirely. And we might even give it precedence to read it before, because you can do that afterwards. But when it comes to a real Mate Mitzvah, over there, we would probably have to give precedence to doing the burial for that real Mate Mitzvah, even in the face of losing out on reading the Megillah. Because that's what brought down by the Mishnah Halacha, but that also gives you the two tzadim here of the Rishonim, about whether when the Gemara here says that one trumps the other, is that simply about order? Or is that even in a case where you can only do one of them, that it would override and even create a big chiddush here, which the Gra and the Taz and all subscribe to, that Mikra Megillah can override mitzvot de'oraita. Right now, the Gemara continues with something that we talked about before, which is Gufa. Am Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Krach, v'chol ha-samuch lo, v'chol ha-niraimo nidon ke-krach. A city, anything that is proximate to it, as well as anything that can be seen by it, is the same status as the city. Tano, samuch, afo pi she'enu nireh, nireh, afo pi she'enu samuch. This applies, meaning that these are independent qualifications. If it's adjacent to the city, even though it's not visible, then it's counted like the city. Nireh, if it's visible, but it's not adjacent to the city, then it's also considered like the city. Bishlamo, now this is all for the din that we spoke about yesterday, which is Tetvav. The city that we're talking about here is a krach, which means it's a walled city from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, they read on the 15th. So do the suburbs around it read on the 15th? That's dependent on this statement. They either have to be samuch, they have to be adjacent, or they have to be nira, they have to be visible. The Gemara says, Pishlama nira, afo pishino samuch. How do I have an instance where something is visible but not close? Shkachalakum diatva berosh hahar. It's on the top of the mountain. Now, the Gemara is not clear here what's on the top of the mountain. Is the city on the top of the mountain? Is the suburb on the top of the mountain? It might be both. It just doesn't matter. The point being that you can see it from further away. It's not so adjacent, but because of its height, either the height of the city, you can see the suburbs, or because of the height of the suburb, you can see it from the city. Either way, that gives you the ability to see it, even though it's not close by. How can you ever have a case where something's adjacent to the city and it's not visible? It says, it's down in the valley. It's down in a low-lying area. So if it's down in a low-lying area, it might be hidden by a mountain or by something else. So even though it's proximate, it's adjacent to the city, it's within a certain radius of the city, nevertheless, it's not visible to the city. And how much is that? We saw before, that's within a mil. It has to be within a mil to be considered adjacent. The locha, it's brought down in terms of samuch here. It's not, there are those that argue that samuch only applies, that nir'ah, the ability to have a city be seen, only applies when it's also within a certain proximity to the major city, not if it's like three parsot away, because it's so high up on a mountain you can see it, that it's included. So that they argue about in the Achronim. As well as, there's another din, which the Beral Ocha brings down here, but it's actually based off of Yerushalmi, and has important implications, which is, that if you have a city that was walled from the time of Yeshua ben Nun, but the city is destroyed, then people that live in proximity or suburbs around it, do not have the din of the Krach. I mean that the Krach, or the city that is walled, has to be an active, extant city, in order for it to then have the ability to draw in the suburbs that are around it to have its same din. But if that city is destroyed and the suburbs still exist, then those suburbs are not drawn after this city. So that's the first statement that we have from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Next statement from Rabbi Shimon Levi. V'amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, krach, sheyashav, ubasof ukraf, nidon kikfar. Is walled city that was settled first and then only walled in later has a din like a kfar, has a din like a village. We'll come back and discuss all of this. My daima, what's the reasoning? Dichtiv, because it says in the pasuk, ish ki imkor beit moshav ir chuma, that a person who sells a house in a walled city, so there are certain dinim that are brought in the end of Sefer Vayikra in Perachav Hei. So then the Gemara learns from that, shukaf ulusof yashav. That's only if it had the wall first and then was settled afterwards. But not where it was settled and then put the wall afterwards. They learn it out by reading the pasuk, Beit Moshav Shel Ir Choma. It's a Beit Moshav, it's a dwelling place in an Ir Choma. It means Shel Ir Choma because the Choma existed beforehand, and the Beit Moshav was placed inside of the Beit Choma, in the Ir Choma. The Ran claims that's because there's a Patach under the Moshav, and therefore it's a really a Nismach. So it's a Beit Moshav Shel Ir Choma instead of being a separate entity and saying that it's a Beit Moshav that creates an Ir Choma. Alright, so therefore, from there, Rabbi Shimon ben Levi learns that you have to have the wall up first, and then the inhabitants move in, or the city is built up inside of the walled area. Rashi claims that this din is a din that Rabbi Shimon ben Levi is talking about by Batei Rechuma. It's a din about selling houses in walled cities, that you have a year to redeem it, after that it's sold forever. But it has nothing to do with Mikra Megillah. It's only about Batei Rechuma. And the Ran gives support to that position of Rashi, because we're going to see when it comes to Tveria, where the Gemara has a safek about Tveria, because one of its walls is water. You see over there that there's a different standard for Mikra Megillah than it is for Batei Rechuma. And therefore, this din is about Batei Rechuma. On the other hand, Tosafot over here says that he thinks that it's a paradigmatic type of din. He's saying, just like by Beit Moshav Rechuma, that happens by Batei Rechuma. The din is that the walls got to be there first, then the inhabitants. The same is true by Mikra Megillah. Even though the dinim are different, even though they have different makeups in terms of what is considered to be a walled city because of the water and other things, nevertheless, in this case, we're just giving you a paradigm as to what is considered to be a walled city. I'm teaching walled cities mean wall first, then the inhabitants afterwards. Now, the use of the term krach and kfar over here have implications because of the next statement of Rabbi Shimon Levi. From Rabbi Shimon Levi, krach shein bo asara batlanim nidon kikfar. A city that does not have asara batlanim in it has a din like a kfar, like a village. Now, the Mishnah uses these terms. Krach in the Mishnah means a walled city. Kfar in the Mishnah means a city that is a village that comes in Yom HaKnisa. So it says here, if you don't have asara batlanim, you're downgraded to a kfar. So the difficulty here is, first of all, why are we talking about a krach at all? Why are we talking about walled cities? What about an ir gdola versus a kfar? So most of the Rishonim here learn that a krach here does not mean the translation that we've used until now, a walled city, but rather krach means a big city. A big city that doesn't have asara batlanim in it is a kfar. It's a village. It's not a city. The definition of a city is that you have 10 people who are always available in shul to make the minyan. So that's what it's called. Asara batlanim is people that are designated who don't work and whose their sole purpose is to be there for the minyanim, to learn Torah, and to be there for the minyanim on time. So that is a krach shein bo asara batlanim nidon kikfar. There are those, like the Ramban, who take it literally and say that the din of asara batlanim not only applies to big cities, but applies to walled cities. The way Tosafot learns over here and others learn over here, a walled city is a walled city whether it has asara batlanim or not. Walled city is walled city, and it goes on the 15th no matter what. Has nothing to do with asara batlanim. But the Ramban takes it literally and says, krach, a walled city that doesn't have 10 batlanim in it, has a din like a kfar, and it becomes like a village. Now, when he says a kfar, he doesn't mean literally it's like a village, but he says it can be like a village. It has a choice. You can go Yom HaKnisa, or you can go on Yudalit, but it can't go on Tedvav, because it doesn't have asara batlanim. Rova Rishonim learned that we're talking about a big city here, and walled cities are not governed by this rule, but again, the Ramban does say that. Now, my Kamash Malon, what is this teaching us? Tanina! We have a Mishnah that already teaches us. Ezo hi ir gdola. What is called an ir gdola? What's a big city? Kol sheyesh bo asara batlanim. And in the city that has 10 batlanim in it. Pachot mikan rei ze kfar. Less than that is called a village. So Gemara says, krach itzrich alei. We need to know about the big city. The afagav demikle lei me'alma. Even though there are people who come. I mean that the big city has a shuk in it. There aren't asara batlanim in the city itself. But, an yom ha-shuk, and when all the people from the outside come into the city, there are asara batlanim there. But since they're not residents of the city, they don't have a din of asara batlanim, and doesn't get a status of a big city, or according to Ramban, doesn't have a status of a walled city, because the people are from the outside. You need 10 residents of the city to be the batlanim that make up the asara batlanim here. And now, Vamar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, Krach Shecharav Ulusof Yashav. You have a city that was destroyed and then inhabited. Idon Kekrach, as it didn't like a city. Where it says, My Charav. What does it mean it was destroyed? Ilemar Charvol Chomotav, that its walls were destroyed. Yashav in, lo Yashav lo. Then, if it's settled, then it's okay. Lo Yashav lo. Vatanya, we have a bright up. Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Asher lo Choma. In that same psukim that we talk about, Batarei Choma, it says Asher lo Choma. In the Torah, it's written Lamed Aleph. Asher lo Choma means it doesn't have a wall. But the Kri is lo Choma Lamed Vav. So what do you see? Afal pi shein lo achshav, vayei lo kodem lekein. That it doesn't matter that the wall is no longer there. As long as the wall was there in the time of Yeshua ben Nun, even if the wall doesn't exist today, that's fine. Because it says Asher lo Choma Lamed Aleph, that's the Tiv in the Torah. So even though it doesn't have a wall today, Asher lo Choma, as long as it had a wall. It had one wall, that's considered to be a wall, and that's sufficient over here. So you can't say here that the wall was destroyed and that takes away its status as a walled city, because it has nothing to do with it. As long as it had a wall at one point, that's enough. Elamai Charav, what does it mean that it was destroyed? Shecharav mi'asara batlanim. It lost its 10 batlanim. Okay, again, what's the big deal? Of course, if it lost its 10 batlanim, it's not a big city. So the Gemara says, no. Rashi explains over here that if you start out with a city with asara batlanim, we're going to assume it's going to stay a big city. We're not choshesh that it's going to lose its status as a big city. The problem is that this city lost that status already. It had asara batlanim, and then it lost the population, went under asara batlanim, and it lost its status as a city. Now it regains its status of a city. Over here, should we be choshesh? Should we worry about the fact that it might lose that status again? Along comes Rabbi Shimon Levi and says, no. Once they reestablish asara batlanim, they go back to their original state, and we don't have to worry, or we're not choshish for the fact that it might fall apart again. All right, so here, again, the din here of Asher Lo Choma teaches you that the wall does not have to be extant today, as long as it's there on time it should be known. A city that's rebuilt on that spot gains the status of that city, even though the wall is no longer in existence. And just give you a little nice vort that I once heard, probably heard 25 years ago, on this Asher Lo Choma, which is that, again, it says Lamed Vav and Lamed Aleph. So the way to read it this way, Asher Lo Choma, a city that Lamed Aleph, Lo Choma, doesn't have a wall, but then Lo Choma, Lamed Vav, meaning referring to Hashem, Lo Choma, Hashem is its wall, that city is protected. On the other hand, Asher Lo Choma, a city that has a wall, then Lo Choma, Lamed Aleph Choma, it doesn't really have a wall, because the wall around the city is not going to make a difference if Hashem's not your wall. That's a nice word on this Lo Choma, that the real Choma, the real wall of the city, is a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and not the physical wall of the city. Again, that's just a vort on the screen Ktiv, Asher Lo Choma. Okay, with that, we'll stop.